Okay, so this talk is about some work or line of work on the interface of cryptography and complexity theory. I won't bore this audience with a lot of sort of high-level discussion. Rather, just to say that this interaction between cryptography and complexity has really, I think, in my mind, been very beneficial for both sides. So in addition to complexity theory providing sort of the conceptual language and conceptual framework on which modern cryptography is built, in return, cryptography has given a lot to complexity theory and led to some of the most interesting notions and exciting developments in complexity theory. And two areas in which this has been most dramatic, one is the theory of pseudorandomness, modern study of which originated in cryptography, and on the complexity side has led to dramatic increases in our understanding of the power of randomized algorithms as compared to deterministic algorithms. It's a subject that I'm very interested in, but won't be talking about today. However, I'll be talking about another area where there's been a lot of interaction between cryptography and complexity, namely the study of zero-knowledge proofs. And given the title of the workshop, I'm assuming people here know what generally what zero-knowledge proofs are. People, I'm assuming, also are familiar with how useful they are in the study and design of cryptographic protocols. Just some sort of philosophically on the reason I think they've been so interesting and inspirational on the complexity theory side is because even the classical questions of the fundamental original questions of complexity theory, like the P versus NP question, are questions about the power of efficiently verifiable proofs. And what zero-knowledge proofs do is they enrich this study of efficiently verifiable proofs by adding interesting new ingredients into the study of proofs, namely randomization, interaction, and secrecy. And thus, zero-knowledge has really led to a lot of exciting developments in complexity theory, which I won't talk about at all. People are probably aware that there's a study of zero-knowledge that led to the development of the study of interactive proofs and the celebrated PCP theorem, which gave complexity theoretic insights into things that have nothing to do with, or at least seem to have nothing to do with cryptography or the original motivations for zero-knowledge. I won't be talking about this thread of work today. rather, I'll be talking about a different line of work on taking a complexity theoretic study of zero-knowledge proofs themselves. And it's a line of work that I've been involved in for a while, and actually just in the last few years got recently very interested in again, and I'll try to convey to you why. People may have seen, I've been in talks with this title for a couple of years now, and I just want to reassure people who have seen earlier versions of this, earlier forms of this talk, is, as I said, talking about a line of work. I'll be talking about some new results today, even though the beginning of the talk will look similar, and I'll try and emphasize different things that I've emphasized in previous incarnations of the talk. Okay, so anyway, what are the goals in this complexity theoretic study of zero knowledge that I want to talk about? So three of the main goals. One is that we want to characterize the expressiveness of zero knowledge proofs. So understand what kinds of statements can be proved in zero knowledge and not. That is, characterize the classes of languages that have zero knowledge proofs. Something we always want to do with complexity theory. We have a new notion. A computational model is characterizing its power. Second, we want to prove general theorems about zero-knowledge proofs, relating different kinds of zero-knowledge proofs to each other. For example, can every honest verifier zero-knowledge proof be turned into a general zero-knowledge proof, or different types of zero-knowledge, can we establish relations between them? And finally, a general goal in research and foundations to cryptography overall is to try and minimize the complexity assumptions we use. And today, I won't be talking so much about the goal of minimizing complexity assumptions. Actually, what I'll be emphasizing is, in fact, trying to eliminate complexity assumptions from the study of zero knowledge when possible. That is, prove general theorems about zero knowledge unconditionally without making any complexity assumptions. Okay, so to start talking about our objects of study. So Zero knowledge proofs come in a variety of different flavors. They have two security conditions. So remember, zero knowledge proofs are they're interactive protocols where a prover is trying to convince a verifier that some statement is true. There are two security conditions. One is the zero knowledge condition. It says when the statement is true, the verifier should learn nothing else. And this security condition, like many in cryptography, comes in different flavors. In particular, we'll be interested in statistical security versus computational security. So you have statistical zero knowledge, which at an intuitive level says that the verifier learns nothing from the interaction regardless of its computational power. Okay? So even a computationally unbounded verifier learns nothing from the interaction. Formally, this is that for every verifier strategy can be simulated in efficiently with only small, negligible statistical distance from the real view of the verifier's, the verifier's real view of the real interaction. Similarly, there's the computational security, which says intuitively that a polynomial time verifier strategy should learn nothing from the interaction. And formally, that's translated by saying you can simulate in a computational indistinguishable way what the verifier sees from the interaction. Then the other security condition in zero knowledge is the soundness condition, which says that the prover, one that deviates from the protocol, should not be able to convince the verifier of false statements. That is, the verifier should reject with high probability if the statement the prover is trying to prove is false. And this, again, comes in two flavors. There's statistical security, which we often refer to as proof systems or interactive proof systems, which says even a computationally unbounded prover shouldn't be able to convince the verifier of a false statement, except with negligible probability. And then there's computational soundness, which is what we often refer to as an argument system, says polynomial time prover strategy can't convince the verifier of a false statement. Okay, so these give rise to four different flavors of zero knowledge. We put an S or a C in the beginning to refer to whether we're talking about statistical or computational zero knowledge. And at the end, we use P for proof system, which is statistical soundness, and A for argument system, which means computational soundness. Okay, and we'll be interested in viewing these as complexity classes. What do we mean by that? So for each of these forms, regardless of whatever the first and last symbol is, we are interested in the class of problems. These are decision problems where you have a zero-knowledge protocol of the corresponding type that allows a prover to prove statements of the form that a given string X that's common input to both the prover and verifier is a yes instance of this decision problem. Okay, so you can think of the decision problem for now as a language proving X is in the language. As we'll see later, we'll talk actually about a slightly more general notion of decision problem later in the talk. Okay, so we're interested in these four complexity classes. Yes?
Why don't you consider perfect?
So there is a stronger notion than statistical, and known as perfect zero knowledge. All right, so perfect soundness turns out not to give you anything interesting. Perfect zero knowledge is interesting. We don't know how to say very much about it and of the type of things that I'm going to say. And just to give you a hint at the sort of the newest result to come out of this that I will talk about later is establishing. So even though on the surface zero knowledge and soundness seem to be very different types of security conditions, zero knowledge is a secrecy property, and soundness is kind of like an unforgeability kind of property that you can't create false proofs. What we will prove is sort of a symmetry between zero knowledge and soundness that you can basically that if you draw a diagonal here, you can flip this picture over as long as you take the complement of the language. That you can, if I can prove that X is in a language with one kind of zero knowledge property and another kind of soundness property, then I can prove X is not in the language with the reverse. Okay? That's one of the results I will mention in the talk.
Professor Clark, you never assume that there's an prover unless you explicitly say it?
All right, so I will get to that later. So actually, for the purposes of the talk, which is a little bit different than what we do in the notation in the paper, to simplify things for the talk, for proof systems, your soundness is against computationally unbounded provers. And we will also, unless I explicitly say so, we'll also allow the honest prover to be computationally unbounded. Okay. But there will be times that I specify efficient prover. Arguments, your soundness is against polynomial time provers. And we will assume that the honest prover is also polynomial time given a witness for membership in the language. Right? Because arguments are a little bit unnatural if you don't require the honest prover to be efficient. Thanks. Okay, so what we're interested in talking about today is unconditional results about these classes. But the first remark I want to make is to recall that under complexity assumptions, actually, we understand all of the computational forms of zero knowledge quite well. Okay, so basically, whenever there's a, so these three boxes. And why is that? The reason is basically goes back to the early days of zero knowledge, and that's the GMW protocol showing that all of NP has zero knowledge proofs under complexity, certain complexity assumptions. Okay, so everyone, I'm not going to go through this in detail. Unbounded prover, to John's question, for now, will allow the honest prover to be unbounded. Convincing a polynomial time verifier, the graph is three-colorable, and everyone is probably familiar with the protocol. Prover commits to a permuted, randomly permuted version of the coloring of the graph, verifier picks an edge, and then the prover opens the commitments. Okay, so, and then the what are commitments? Commitments have two properties. One is the hiding property. It says commitment to zero or one value should be indistinguishable from a commitment to another. This is what gives you the zero knowledge property of the protocol. And you have a binding property that says once once you commit to something, you can't change your mind about what the value is. And this is what's used to prove the soundness of the three coloring protocol. And the hiding and binding each come in two flavors. A statistical hiding, you can ask for statistical indistinguishability, or computational hiding and computational indistinguishability. Similarly, binding, you have statistical binding that even an unbounded sender can't open the commitment in two ways, and computational binding, a polynomial time sender can't break open a commitment in two ways. And these give rise to the corresponding forms of zero knowledge protocols if you use them to implement the three coloring protocol, computational versus statistical zero knowledge. Proofs versus arguments. Okay, so putting that together, let's start with so these three forms of computational forms of zero knowledge. if we know that one way function, so the form I'm focusing on right now are where the zero knowledge condition is computational and the soundness is statistical, computational zero knowledge proofs. So if one way functions exist, then we know by Hassad and Palyatsov-Levin and Luby and Naor that we have bit commitment schemes that are computationally hiding and statistically binding. And then by the GMW protocol, all of NP has computational zero knowledge proofs. Okay? And in fact, the GMW protocol can be used as a building block to in fact give a general compiler converting any interactive proof into a zero knowledge proof. And in fact, you get so that if one-way functions exist, everything that has an interactive proof whatsoever has a computational zero-knowledge proof. All right, and so computational CZKP here equals all of IP, and we understand IP very well. In fact, we know it's equal to the class of problems decidable in polynomial space. And as a consequence of this, we get many other general results about computational zero-knowledge that if you have any problem that has a computational zero-knowledge proof, it also has one with public coins and perfect completeness, because in fact, every problem that has an interactive proof whatsoever. Just this construction actually gives you a proof with public coins and perfect completeness. Or public coins means the verifier's messages are only random coin tosses, don't involve any secret, verifier doesn't maintain any secret coin tosses. You can convert honest verifier computational zero-knowledge proofs into ones that are robust against cheating verifier strategies. You get closure properties. Computational zero-knowledge proofs inherit all the closure properties of P space. And to John's question, you also observe, and this is very important for cryptographic applications, that the three coloring protocol, so for problems in NP, actually gives you a proof system where the prover is polynomial time given an NP witness, which is the three coloring in the protocol we just saw. Okay, for me, constant rounds is constant rounds with non-negligible soundness. Okay. Not with negligible soundness. Thanks. Okay, similarly, so here we've gotten the soundness to be statistical. Similarly, but the zero knowledge is computational. And similarly, it's known how to do most of the two. You could do say similar things about the reverse, where the zero knowledge is statistical and the soundness is computational. Statistical zero knowledge arguments. So under complexity assumptions, we know how to construct statistically hiding and computationally binding commitment schemes. Okay. Actually, to construct standard commitments, stronger complexity assumptions than one-way functions are all we know. So Naor, Ostrowski, Venkatesan, and Young showed how to do it using one-way permutations. What Shenjin will talk about in the next talk is how to still get zero knowledge for NP just from one-way functions for this setting, where you want statistical zero knowledge and computational soundness. By a weaker notion of commitment known as one out of two binding commitments, which I'll mention several times in the talk, but I won't define them. All right, so just think of them. There's some weaker variant of commitments that suffice for zero knowledge. Shenjin will talk about those in some detail. All right, so all of NP has statistical zero knowledge arguments. And in fact, statistical zero knowledge arguments, like happened in the previous case, are as big as possible in the sense that now it's not all of IP, it's all of MA, which is just, you think of it as a slight randomized generalization of NP, has statistical zero knowledge arguments. And the reason we're getting MA instead of IP here is because of the what John asked about. When we talk about arguments, we're always assuming the honest prover is polynomial time. Okay, so we also understand this very well under complexity assumptions. And as a consequence, also computational zero knowledge arguments, since we can get either one of the security properties to be statistical, that's only better. And computational zero knowledge arguments are only easier to construct. Right, so if one-way functions exist, we understand computational forms of zero knowledge very well. So the subject of this talk is, what can we say? Do we really need this assumption that one-way functions exist to have this kind of an understanding of zero knowledge? Okay, so in particular, some of these types of results, that equivalence of private coins and public coins, imperfect completeness, honest verifier versus general, closure properties, these are asserting relations between different variants of zero knowledge. And one might wonder whether these relationships are sort of intrinsic to the notion of zero knowledge, or they really are consequences of the existence of one-way functions. Okay, so, yeah?
I'm going to jump ahead, but if statistical zero knowledge argument is equal to MA, and you said if the language belongs to this class, then the component belongs to, you know, the other way around.
I will clarify that later. Okay? Okay. Hold your question for later. There's a catch in what I said, and that will come to you later, but I don't want to.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, so the question we're interested in is can we prove similar, are these properties just somehow, do they follow from the definition of zero knowledge without assuming the existence of one-way functions? Okay, so So the first place one might look for unconditional results is actually not at the computational forms of zero knowledge, but rather the case where both security properties are statistical. Because for statistical zero knowledge proofs, when both security properties are statistical, complexity assumptions don't seem so useful in understanding the class of problems that have statistical zero knowledge proofs. In particular, you know, the corresponding notion that it's impossible to have commitment schemes that are statistically hiding and statistically binding. And indeed, there is a wide variety of unconditional results known about statistical zero-knowledge proofs. So indeed, some of the first examples of zero-knowledge protocols were statistical zero-knowledge proofs, quadratic residuosity, graph isomorphism, so on. But then, starting in the mid-90s, with a remarkable paper of Okamoto, he started to prove the same kind of theorems that I was results that I was mentioning before about the computational forms of zero knowledge, these same kind of general theorems, unconditionally for the class of problems having statistical zero knowledge proofs. So we showed that statistical zero knowledge, anything that has a statistical zero knowledge proof also has one with public coins and perfect completeness. You prove closure properties, closure under complement, closure under union. Then in joint works that I did with our organizer, Amit, and Oded Goldreich. We gave natural complete problems for statistical zero-knowledge proofs and showed that you can convert any honest verifier statistical zero-knowledge proof into one that's robust against cheating verifiers. And then a more recent result last year, earlier this year, with my student Min Noyen, we also proved that for problems in NP, you can get statistical zero-knowledge proofs with a polynomial time prover. Okay, and these are all, so anything that has a statistical zero knowledge proof, even with an unbound prover, if it's an NP, it also has one with a polynomial time prover. Right, and all of these results are unconditional. So that's good, but on the other hand, statistical zero knowledge proofs really are much more constrained than the computational forms of zero knowledge. In particular, by Fortnow and Ayala and Hastad, they showed that every problem that has a statistical zero-knowledge proof is contained in a class called AM intersect co-AM. If you don't know what this is, just think of it as NP intersect co-NP. In particular, NP uncomplete problems are unlikely to have statistical zero-knowledge proofs. So we'd like to be able to get similar kinds of results for the computational forms of zero-knowledge, and I'll be describing some of those to you in the talk. So, a couple of years ago, we had a result showing that getting similar kinds of unconditional results for computational zero-knowledge proofs, that is, again, zero-knowledge is computational, soundness is statistical, we can prove many, not all, of the same kinds of results that I mentioned before, unconditionally, without assuming one-way functions exist. Okay, so we don't show that every problem that has a computational zero-knowledge, every problem in IP has a computational zero-knowledge proof, but we give some new characterizations of this class, unconditional characterizations, that are, in some sense, you can think of them as like complete problems, though they're not quite complete problems, they're useful in the way that complete problems are, and get equivalence of private coins and public coins, honest verifier in general, some closure properties, closure under union, but not complement. We don't know how to show that unconditionally, even though under one-way functions we know that, and this thing also about polynomial time provers. Came in this paper with Min. What?
Do we know any languages that are unconditionally in CDK and not in SDK?
No, and you'll see why. From the way we prove this theorem, you'll see why.
I'm wondering kind of like your motivation. You can understand. So in SDK we have problems that are in there, that we know are in it. So it's nice to study, but here we don't have anything unconditionally.
Right, so John's question is what is the motivation when we don't have examples of computational zero-knowledge proofs that are not statistical zero-knowledge proofs unless we make complexity assumptions? And that's a good question. So one thing you'll see that comes out of this is that it will clarify, in some sense, justify our experience in that, is that the way we will prove this is actually by showing that essentially computational zero-knowledge proofs, really what they amount to is statistical zero-knowledge and one-way functions. And we'll clarify exactly the way in which that's the case. The other thing is just, approaching this from the perspective of a complexity theorist. You know, most of what we know how to show in complexity theory is if X, then Y. Right? And ultimately, we would like to just prove Y for all of these kinds of theorems without the hypothesis. Right? And it's not that removing the hypothesis in these theorems necessarily has any immediate impact on the practice of cryptography, but it's a small step in our sort of overall project of removing assumptions. Okay, so the some newer results with Shenzhen are doing some things for the other classes. So now, if you switch proofs to arguments, now both security properties are computational. We also get similar kinds of results about this class. And getting back to this sort of thing I mentioned earlier about trading zero knowledge for soundness, here we get a closure under complement of this class. And then getting to Yevgeny's question, the closure under complement has what we need to throw in is the fact we know that by our polynomial time per rubric constraint, anything that has a computational zero knowledge argument is an MA, right? And so what we need to do is assert that the complement is also an MA, so which is not referring to the security, at least not referring to. So once we throw this in, that it has any chance of having a zero knowledge computational zero knowledge argument, then we get closure under complement, right? That the complement, putting this in, is a requirement for the complement having any chance of having a computational zero knowledge argument, and then we get closure under complementation.
Is it clear that this CZ, whatever class is equal to MA under one way functions belongs to the class which is equal to IP unconditionally? Can we like immediately see that any problem which has statistical whatever argument is also has computational proof unconditionally of curiosity?
I'm not sure that's obvious, but it will follow from what we show.
Unconditionally.
Well, no, I think it does. No, actually, I'm not sure that it's obvious, but it will follow. All right, and now now we can make the zero knowledge statistical again. All right, so now the soundness is computational. Similar kinds of results. And now, again, with respect to this symmetry between zero knowledge and soundness, here what we say is problems that have statistical zero knowledge arguments are exactly the complements of problems that have computational zero knowledge proofs. Again, modulo the constraint that since we're talking and restricting arguments to polynomial time provers, we need to restrict ourselves to problems in MA. Okay, so all right, so now I'll talk a little bit about sort of the general approach and then make it more precise of how we can prove unconditional results about these computational forms of zero knowledge. So our approach is inspired by a beautiful paper of Ostrowski and Vigerson, which said the following. What they showed is that if there's any problem that has a zero knowledge protocol, even a zero knowledge argument, that is, and the problem is non-trivial, it's not in BPP, then some weak form of one-way functions exist. Okay. So given this theorem, so in some sense, some form of one-way functions are necessary for non-trivial zero knowledge. And so then what they suggested is that maybe one could prove unconditional results about zero knowledge by a case analysis. Case one, zero knowledge collapses to BPP. Then everything we want to know about zero knowledge is trivial, because every problem in BPP, so BPP is the class of problems that can be decided in probabilistic polynomial time, has a trivial zero knowledge proof where the verifier just decides for itself and the prover doesn't send anything. Case two, zero knowledge is different from BPP. And then the idea is, well, then their theorem says we get some weak form of one-way function. Maybe we can plug this one-way function into the conditional results we know about zero knowledge based on one-way functions. Okay, and then get all the results we want. So this is a very appealing approach. And as you get my guess, the difficulty in carrying out this approach, which Ostrowski and Vigerson also point out, is that the weak form of one-way function that one gets from their theorem is weaker than the standard notion of one-way function in an important fundamental way that doesn't allow it to be used to build commitment schemes and plug into the standard constructions of zero knowledge proofs. Okay, so what do? So we take a similar sort of case analysis kind of approach. But what we do is we replace BPP, we replace probabilistic polynomial time, with SCKP, the class of problems having statistical zero-knowledge proofs. And now the idea is that case one is not so trivial anymore, but in case one, we can leverage all the unconditional results we know about statistical zero-knowledge. And actually, to carry this out, the case analysis is not quite so coarse, separating into, it's not really two cases in a global sense. The case analysis is somehow done on an input-by-input basis, which I'll make precise, where given a problem that has a zero-knowledge protocol, computational zero-knowledge argument, we'll classify each input as either being one that corresponds to a statistical zero-knowledge proof or one from which we can build a one-way function. All right, and so the intuition about why we gain here is that somehow the one-way functions in Ostrovsky-Vigerson, part of the reason why they're hard to invert is relies on the intractability of the language, because you're assuming the language is not in BPP. And this is something that's hard to quantify. In particular, different algorithms with, an algorithm with n squared running time will get certain inputs right, an algorithm with n cubed running time might get more inputs right. And so it's hard to say on an input-by-input basis whether those are the hard inputs or not. Right? So one can say something very interesting, which they do, but not enough to carry out the case analysis. And what we're replacing this with is this intractability of the language. Instead, we're exploiting the gap between computational and statistical security to build a one-way function. So let's see how this is formalized. To do so, we'll need the notion of a promise problem, which is a more general notion of decision problem than a language. So in a language, every string is either a yes instance or a no instance, and the problem is given any string, decide which is the case. In a promise problem, you allow yourself to exclude some inputs. So some are yes instances, some are no instances, and the rest are excluded. And the computational problem is given an input, which is promised to be either a yes instance or a no instance, decide which is the case. All right, so a common example one sees in a complexity course is unique satisfiability. And all the definitions of the classes we're talking about generalize to promise problems in a natural way. Things that you normally require for inputs in the language, you require on yes instances. So for example, zero knowledge and completeness, you require for yes instances. And soundness, you require for no instances. Okay, now I can say how we do this classification of inputs into statistical zero knowledge inputs and ones from which you can build a one-way function. So, we have a promise problem, pi, depicted up here, and two sets, I, which is some subset of the yes instances, and no, which is some j, which is some subset of the no instances. We'll say that this triple, pi, I, and j, since SCKP is really hard to say, so I'll just say SDK one-way function triplet, if the following holds. So first, if you remove the inputs in I and J, what you're left with is a promise problem in SCKP, that is, a problem that has a statistical zero-knowledge proof. Second, when the input is in sets I and J, I or J, you can use it to build a one-way function. And how do we make that precise? We require that there's a polynomial time computable collection of functions. So these are functions that are of two inputs, x, which we is an instance of the computational of pi, and y, and we think of y as the real input to this as a one-way function, and x is kind of an auxiliary input or advice. Okay, and what we require is always so. All right, the length of x and y should be polynomially related. We require f to be computed in polynomial time given x and y. And what we require is that when x is in set I or set j, the function f sub x should be hard to invert, and hard to invert in the usual sense for one-way functions, that no polynomial time algorithm given f sub x on a random input should be able to invert except with negligible probability.
So given an input, can we figure out which case it is in?
Okay, so right now it's just a definition, and in the definition I'm not imposing anything about the sets I and j being easy to recognize. And in fact, that's a and when we establish this characterization, we won't have any guarantee that they're easy to recognize. And that's one of the main challenges in making use of it.
So when f of x is 100, invert x is fixed, right?
There's no right, x is fixed.
X.
There's no probability over it. The probability is only over y. So the first comment is if one-way functions exist in the standard sense, then every promise problem so for every promise problem, there exist sets I and j that make it a SEK one-way function triplet. You could take I to be the set of all yes instances, or j to be the set of all no instances, and you're left with a trivial promise problem that where the answer is always yes, or the answer is always no, or maybe that there's not even any inputs whatsoever. You take I to be all the yes instances, j to be all the no instances. And moreover, why do you get a one-way function on I and j? Well, if standard one-way functions exist, you don't need any advice or auxiliary input to have a one-way function. You just need a security parameter, the length of it, and that's enough to get a function that's hard to invert. But that shouldn't worry us too much, because we're interested in what we can prove without assuming that one-way functions exist. All right, but it does say we need to add an additional condition to get a characterization, because we don't want, because zero knowledge proofs can only be had by problems in IP, can't be had by undecidable problems, for example. It turns out that's the only additional condition we need to add. So the first theorem is that for characterizing computational zero knowledge proofs, you say a problem has a computational zero knowledge proof if and only if it's in IP, and there exists a set of yes instances, I, making it a SDK one-way function triplet. Okay, and in this case, the set J is actually empty. And that's the first of the results. And then the newer results are saying, okay, now what if we talk about arguments? Well, for arguments, all we need to do is allow the set J. So a problem has a computational zero knowledge argument if and only if it's an MA, and there exists sets I and J making it one of these triplets. And for statistical zero knowledge proofs, well, now we just make I empty. And we get a characterization of the classic problems having statistical zero knowledge arguments. Okay, so, all right, to summarize, we have this notion of an SDK one-way function triplet, and to get a characterization of statistical zero knowledge proofs, well, you just set I and J both to be empty. All right, and then for computational zero knowledge proofs, J is empty. For statistical zero knowledge arguments, I is empty. And if both security conditions are computational, then neither is empty. And so notice that this picture is completely symmetric in the way it treats yes instances and no instances, with the set I being empty corresponding to a statistical security condition for zero knowledge, set J being empty corresponding to a statistical security condition for soundness. Okay, and this is how you get the closure under complementation. And moreover, the SDK part is symmetric, closed under complement by Okamoto's result that statistical zero knowledge proofs are closed under complement. Right, and then the only other, so the other catch is that you need to add this condition, deal with the conditions about the problem being an IP or MA, which we, as Evgeny pointed out. Right, so we have this sort of symmetry between zero knowledge and soundness.
CDK also works, right? I mean, it also works just for J and I and J. It's the last class result. Right?
Yes. So, yeah, these are just, right. That's right. Okay, so in the time I have left, I think I'll tell you a little bit about one direction of the proof. I don't think I'll get to, and I'll talk about the direction which I don't usually talk about, which is how you go from zero knowledge to these triplets. Okay. So actually, just before doing that, let me just sort of say, the way we get in it, so we have these two directions in all of our theorems, two directions to prove, going from zero knowledge to the triplet and the triplet back to zero knowledge. In reality, in both cases, we prove something stronger than what's required. And that's how we get all of the sort of theorems, the results that I mentioned earlier. So in one direction, going from zero knowledge to the triplet, it in fact the proof works even if it's an honest verifier zero knowledge protocol, and even if the prover is inefficient, not unbounded prover. We get that there exist sets in I and J making it a triplet. Okay? And then, going from the triplets to zero knowledge, adding the condition that the problem is an MA or IP as necessary, you get zero knowledge protocols that are good against cheating verifiers. Moreover, they have nice properties like public coins, perfect completeness, and a polynomial time prover given a witness for membership. All right, and then in addition, so this is the, to get all of the results, you also just need to observe that if you start with a proof system, the set J is empty, and if you start with J empty, you get a proof system, and similarly for the zero knowledge conditions. If that's statistical, you get I empty, and conversely. Okay, so what I will talk about in the time that's left is just this implication right here. Given that a problem has a zero knowledge argument, we want to show that there are sets I and J making one of these triplets. Okay. So
I didn't understand the J. Can you go back for a minute?
Yeah.
What is it that you observe on the right?
Oh, so this implication right now is dealing with the case that both security conditions are, these are computational.
Yeah.
And then that corresponds to triplets where the sets, both the sets I and J might be non-empty.
Okay.
The same proof, if you observe, that the same proofs here, that if the soundness here is statistical, you actually, the set J will turn out to be empty.
It sounds like you're saying J must be, like there is no I and J where J is not empty or anything like that. You're just saying the same proof will work.
Right.
In a proof, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And similarly, when the zero knowledge condition is statistical. Okay. So, if a problem has an honest verifier, zero knowledge argument, then we want to show the sets I and J making one of these triplets. So let's let P and V be the zero knowledge argument, and S be the simulator. We only have one simulator because we're talking about honest verifier zero knowledge. So what do we know? By the definitions, we know that when we have a yes instance, the output of the simulator is computationally indistinguishable from the verifiers through the interaction, which I'm just denoting as PV of X. And when the input is a no instance, we have computational soundness, which says that no polynomial time prover can make the verifier accept with non-negligible probability. No polynomial time prover strategy. We also have completeness, which I haven't written here. And as a result of completeness, you can also assume, without such generality, it's a common assumption in this line of work, that the simulator always outputs accepting transcripts on both yes instances and no instances. Right, it's easy to make, it's a standard modification. You can make this modification without hurting either the zero knowledge or the sound. And the intuition is that in the yes instances, which is the only time you care about the properties of the simulator, it should be outputting accepting conversation most of the time anyway for it to be indistinguishable from the real interaction. Okay, so now what we are going to do is to construct our triplet. We need to find these sets I and J such that if we remove them, we get statistical zero knowledge, a problem that has a statistical zero knowledge proof. Doesn't mean that this is a statistical zero knowledge proof, but the problem needs to have one. And we construct one-way functions in the sets I and J. So now this happens by analysis of the simulator. This is a general approach that began first, I think, in the work of Fortnow, and then was developed and refined over a long sequence of works. And the general approach is the following. So given the simulator, we think of the simulator as defining an interaction between a fictional, a simulated prover, P sub S, and a simulated verifier, V sub S. Okay? These are not polynomial time strategies. These are just, these are sort of fictional strategies, which are defined by, so let's say the I plus first message is the prover's turn. So now we'll define what P sub X will do on if the history so far is M1 up to MI, it'll respond message MI plus 1 with just the conditional probability in the simulator. The probability that the I plus first message produced in the simulation is MI plus 1, given that the first I messages are M1 up to MI, okay, assuming the probability is non-zero. So that's the simulation-based prover. Similarly, one can define a simulation-based verifier. All right, so the next key thing is to come up with a measure of how similar the simulation-based verifier is to the real verifier. I'm going to defer saying what this measure is. It's key to making this whole argument work, and I'll say at the end what the choice of the measure is. For now, we think we have somehow come up with some measure of how similar the simulation-based verifier is to the real verifier. Right, and this measure makes sense, it's a statistical, it's not a computational one, makes sense for all inputs x. Okay, so now I'll tell you how to define the sets I and j. I will be the set of yes instances where the simulation-based verifier is not very similar in a statistical sense to the real verifier. Okay, so this is the kind of what the opposite of what you would expect. On yes instances, the simulator is supposed to be indistinguishable from the real interaction, right? At least computationally. And so we're putting in sets I where it's statistically not similar to the real interaction. Right? So we're intuitively capturing this gap between computational zero knowledge and statistical zero knowledge. We're removing those, the ones where it's not behaving well statistically. And similarly, on J, we do the opposite. The no instances where the simulation-based verifier is not far from the real verifier. Not too far from the real verifier. All right. So now, let's go through the different properties we want. We want that if we remove the sets I and J, then we are left with a problem that has a statistical zero-knowledge proof. So what happens when we remove I and J? Now, deciding whether you have a yes instance or not amounts to telling you need to distinguish the case that the simulation-based verifier is similar to the real verifier from the case that the simulation-based verifier is different from the real verifier. And this kind of approximating statistical properties of distributions are the kinds of problems that are complete for statistical zero knowledge. Okay. Now, you might think that the one we use is the complete problem given in my paper with the MIT, that if you have two samplable distributions, you want to tell whether they're statistically far or close in standard statistical distance, that's complete for statistical zero knowledge. You might think that's what we use here. But because of this issue, it really depends on it's not clear how to use that measure for this proof, and actually we'll use the other complete problem. But that's the basic approach.
What do you mean, the completeness? You just need to show that it has a proof.
Right, so the way we show it as a proof is to show that it reduces to one of the complete problems. So the point is that these measures here are not going to be statistical distance, and also they're talking about just about the verifier, the simulation-based verifier versus the real verifier. They're not talking about the entire interaction being indistinguishable. And that also leads to a problem in applying the complete problem, is that the distributions, it's not obvious that they're samplable. In what sense? It's not even a single distribution. It's these strategies, these conditional distributions. So this is just the intuition for making it work. Now we need to say that on the set I, we can construct a one-way function. Well, what do we know on the set I? Well, everything in I is a yes instance. So the output of the simulator and the real interaction are computationally indistinguishable. Moreover, the simulated verifier, which is here, and in the simulator, and the real verifier don't behave like each other. That's by definition of the set I. So it seems that we have two distributions that are computationally indistinguishable, but statistically far. And result of Goldreich, building on Hill, shows that you can construct one-way functions from any such two distributions. Again, a catch, similar to the one that I was hinting at on the previous one, is that Goldreich's result only holds if both distributions are polynomial time samplable. You can generate the polynomial time algorithm that generates the distributions. And here, the real interaction is not samplable. Right? First, because we're not assuming that the prover is polynomial time, but even if the prover is polynomial time, it's not polynomial time just given x, and we don't have our hands on the witness if the prover is using witness. Right? So this doesn't quite work as is. But it turns out that when we choose a different measure for the similar and far, to measure how similar the verifier is from the real verifier is from the simulated verifier, the simulation-based verifier, then things do work. Okay, and now the last thing is, how do we get a one-way function on the instances in J? All right, so let's reason so about it in a series of steps. So by assumption, the simulator always outputs accepting conversations. That was one of our, said without loss of generality, we can assume that. So in particular, simulation-based prover makes the simulation-based verifier accept with probability one. If you play these two against each other, it's just like running the simulator. But now, if the simulation-based verifier is not too far from the real verifier, then the simulation-based prover should also make the real verifier accept with good probability, say some constant. But we have computational soundness. It says no polynomial time strategy should be able to make the real verifier accept with non-negligible probability. So it must be the case that the simulation-based prover is inefficient. In particular, it must be hard to even approximate the simulation-based prover strategy, to carry out a strategy that's even close to it. And then we'll use an idea from Rafi's paper from 91, which says that if you could invert the simulator in a certain sense, right? So this is think of the simulator as mapping its coin tosses to a transcript. If you could invert this function, then you could approximate the simulation-based prover strategy, right? You need to invert it in what's the sense of a distributional one-way function for those who know what it is. Intuitively, that makes sense. You run it on the transcript and invert it, get coin tosses, and that tells you the next message. And so this is how you get a one-way function on set J. And so this is entirely relying on the techniques from Rafi's paper. One difference is that Rafi's analysis was used on guessed instances of a proof system that's statistical zero knowledge. And then you say that this argument always works, and thus if the language is intractable, it must be that the simulator is hard to invert on that yes instance. And we're applying it on no instances to exploit a gap between statistical and computational soundness. Okay, so now just the last thing before I finish is just to specify this mysterious measure of the similarity between the simulation-based verifier and the real verifier. And the measure we use comes from originates in the paper of Aiello and Hastad, and was framed in the language that I'll present, sort of crystallized in the work of Petrenko and Tardosh. It's an information theoretic measure, and what basically we look at the difference in the entropy of the real verifier's messages from the entropy of the simulated verifier's messages. Okay, so you can ensure that what is the entropy of the real verifier's messages? You can make sure that that's equal to just the number of coin tosses of the verifier. Okay, certainly it's at most that, and you can always modify the verifier so that it just sends its coin tosses in the last message. So then in that case, the entropy of the real verifier is just the number of coin tosses, which you can compute efficiently. And now how do you compute the entropy of the simulated verifier's messages? Let's say the verifier is sending the even number of messages. We'll sum up the conditional entropies. So take the simulator, run it on input X, that gives you transcripts, random variable, and you look at the conditional entropy of each verifier message given the prefix, and you sum these conditional entropies up. Intuitively, this you're measuring the amount of entropy contributed by the simulated verifier's messages. And then once you have this choice of measure, everything works. Okay? You measure the defined sets I and J in terms of this measure. For just a comment, the complete problem you reduce to is one that involves entropy. It's the entropy difference problem in my paper with Odette Goldreich, for those who are familiar with it. The reason you get around the samplability problem here is that you don't just get distributions that are computationally indistinguishable but statistically far. In this case, you get, it turns out you get distributions that are a samplable distribution coming from the simulator that's computationally indistinguishable from a distribution that has higher entropy. And then you don't need the higher entropy distribution to be samplable. It turns out you can still get a one-way function. Okay? So that's how you get these triplets. And the other implication I won't talk about, don't have time, and this, you'll see the He flashed the slides. This relies on the notion of what's called an instance-dependent commitment scheme. And basically, these are commitment schemes that have an auxiliary input that are hiding on some inputs when the auxiliary input x, which is again an instance of your problem, hiding for some values of x and binding for others. We construct instance-dependent commitment schemes in all three cases, on statistical zero knowledge, on set I, on set j, and then we combine them via very sort of standard methods. These use this notion of one out of two binding commitments that Shenjin will talk about in the next talk. Okay, so I'm skipping over that part. I didn't expect to have time for it. Okay, so for someone like me that sits at this interface of cryptography and complexity, zero knowledge is just full of interesting things to study. What sort of things to take away from this talk, I guess, mainly is this, the second, that all the forms of zero knowledge, except for perfect, but whether you talk about computational or statistical security, can all be characterized in terms of problems that have statistical zero knowledge proofs, together with instances from which you can construct one-way functions. Okay, and this allows you to prove unconditional results about all these forms of zero knowledge. In some sense, it reduces the study of general forms of zero knowledge to the study of statistical zero knowledge and to the study of the consequences of one-way functions, both of which we understand quite well. A theme in the latter part of the talk, which we didn't really get to, are something else that plays a key role in these results are variations on the notions of commitment, both this notion of instance-dependent commitments, which are, I think, very powerful and very deeply related to zero knowledge, and one of the two binding commitments, which you'll hear a lot about in the next talk.